have not done one of these delightfully dark discussions in a while. We've been incredibly busy. It's been absolutely wonderful, but the workload that we've had has just been has really prevented us from doing another one of these. But we're really happy to be back here, and we're going to try something new for the background. This is one of our coven altars that we use. This is the main one. This is the one where we do all our main rituals and group castings with everybody monthly. Right now we kind of have it set up with the summer solstice theme and also a bunch of the citrines that we use when working with Lord Mammon. So that's what you see before you. But welcome. So for today's topic, we're going to talk about four very fascinating aspects of working with demons. That would be a divination, channeling, transvocation, and possession. So we're going to start with divination. So, Alana, what does divination mean to you?
Divination to me is just getting the different messages through different means. I mean, some people, I think, use tools at times, which you probably should discuss. Mm-hmm. And also just relaying the messages given through psychic senses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, divination is basically where you're using your psychic senses or different mediumship tools or anything really at your disposal to kind of receive and interpret messages from the Dark Lord's demon companions, any spiritual entity that you work with. Basically, what you're doing when you're divining is you are connecting with the energies and finding a way to interpret those energies and bring them into our language, into words that can be understood. Because really, a lot of spiritual beings, they speak in energies, they speak in vibrations. For clairaudience, they speak in words. For clairvoyance, they speak in images and visions. And for clairsentience, like myself, they speak in vibrations and energies. So really, when it comes to divination, you're basically just connecting with them and getting messages from them. You can do that in a number of ways. I personally rely a lot on my natural psychic senses. I find that connecting with them energetically and receiving the messages through my clairsentience skill, I get really powerful messages. I get really layered messages. Oftentimes, the messages that I get when I go back and look at them later, I usually see things that I missed the first time reading them or see images where things appear later in my life. And I go back and I'm like, oh, they were actually talking about this. And it's really, really, really fascinating to see just the complexity and the layered aspect of the messages. And Alana, she's a natural clairaudience. So her experience with receiving messages is incredibly different than mine.
Yes, I actually hear what they're saying. It's like being in the room with somebody speaking to me, which is difficult when I'm talking to somebody and they want me to tell them what's being said. It's like, okay, well, stop talking so I can hear them, because otherwise it sounds like a bunch of voices all at once. It's like being in a crowded room.
That's completely different than how I sense them, because of being clairsentient, I feel the energies. So the energies, when they hit me, they're vibrating a specific frequency. And over time, I've learned to kind of say, okay, this vibration is this word, this vibration is this word, this vibration is this word. So it's not actually hearing from me. It's more I'm feeling words and feeling their messages, which, no, I'm not on drugs. I actually have never taken any drugs in my life, so that's just how I've always been. I've been like this since I was a child. I've described these sensations to my parents. I've described these aspects to different people in my life. And this is it's a natural sense to me. It's just as normal to me as hearing, seeing, tasting, touching, and smelling. It's a sense that I have. It's a part of who I am. So feeling the energies and kind of getting a sense for the messages around, it's something that I've been developing since I was a child. And clairsentience, it is one of the hardest skills to learn initially, but it's so versatile because you can actually transform it into images. You can transform it into words. You can transform it into sensations. So you kind of get this overall picture of things, but it can be frustrating to master, because you're basically dealing with energy vibrations. There's an infinite amount of energy vibrations out there. But luckily, the demons helped me with that.
I think a lot of people also may be able to sense things but not interpret them.
Oh, definitely.
And a big part of it is learning how to interpret the energies, because people, I think, are naturally tuned into things and can feel things. Like if you could feel somebody staring at you and you're not looking at them.
That's clairsentience right there. Yeah, a lot of people do have clairsentience. I've noticed that. Like clairsentience is it's a skill. It's heavily tied into, like you said, that, you know, that kind of that instinct, that raw instinct.
Yes.
So a lot of people have it, but I think a lot of people have been taught to ignore it, or they've taught that it's just, you know, it's not something that can be really developed. So a lot of people don't develop it. So they either end up ignoring it, or they just, you know, brush it off as, oh, well, you know, this is just normal. Which basically what it comes down to is, we have been taught to ignore our higher senses. We've been taught to ignore our psychic senses.
I was just going to say, yes, because especially with clairsentience, because I did take courses on developing it, and I was surprised to learn I actually had it already somewhat developed. I just didn't realize I had it or how to interpret things. I mean, by that point, I had already been working with it, but I hadn't really had it defined. And we are taught to ignore our senses. It's like, oh, well, if I can't physically, tangibly touch this or see it, you know, I just feel like it's there, I should ignore it because I'm probably imagining things.
I think that's why clairaudience and clairvoyance are easier to develop, is because they're so, it's like you hear them. You hear things that aren't there. People who are clairvoyant see things that aren't there. They see, they get these images, they get these impressions, and it's like, it's such a powerful, you know, experience. But clairsentience, it's like, oh, well, I feel things all the time.
Yeah, well, even with clairaudience, for me, I didn't believe what I heard. That took a lot of convincing.
The belief part. A lot of people have trouble with the belief part.
Yeah, I did not believe what I was hearing, and then things would happen. I'm like, this is really strange. Why can I hear this, and then it happens? Or why can I hear this, and I say something to someone, and then they're like, how did you know that? It's like, oh, you know, I was told that. I heard it, and then I repeated it, and it took...
And we're taught that that makes us crazy.
But... Yes, I thought I was crazy for a while.
Yeah, there's a lot of stigma attached to it. My whole notion of that is, and I'm not a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or anything in the medical community, so this is not medical advice at all. But kind of my take on it is, if the voices disrupt your life, then you need to seek medical help immediately, and you need to find some way to have them not disrupt your life. But if they don't disrupt your life, if they're just kind of a part of, you know, who you are, then there's really no problem. You know, it's only a problem when they start to really disrupt and destroy your life. And I know there are lots of people out there. There are lots of people who need psychiatric and medical intervention. And it's good that they have it available to them. And, you know, it's that isn't something to be ashamed of either. I don't think any of this stuff we should really be ashamed of any of this. You know, even if people who do need medical intervention, even people who don't need medical intervention, who just, you know, have these things, there is so much shame placed on us in society. And that shame, I find, really it not only blocks us from our abilities, it also blocks us from healing. It blocks us from seeking help. It blocks us from so many things. Whereas if we drop the shame and just, like, you know, we're authentically ourselves, just, you know what, hey, this is me. I hear things. I sense things, you know, I see things. Or in some people's situations, I've got destructive voices in my head and I need help. You know, it would go a long way towards helping us kind of move forward as a culture, I think, because there's so much about ourselves and about this world that we don't know. And the last thing we really need is shame to kind of beat us into the ground.
Yeah, and I think also with that, like you said, you hear destructive voices, or, you know, you'll hear this or that. Not being able to open up and talk about it with other people, you're not really then able to verify what it is. Mm-hmm. Because I think you had covered this in another video already. What are the demons? Are they voices in your head? Are mm-hmm. they external entities? And some people, I think, are actually talking to voices in their head and think they're external entities.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may be talking to external entities and think their voice is in their head, but yes. How do you know that?
And the only way you know that is to dive into it.
Yeah.
And yes, if those voices become destructive, there is an entire field of professionals which are there to help you out. And I honestly think that when it comes to destructive voices, no avenue should be overlooked. No avenue. Because, I mean, I've been in cases where the medical community has been able to intervene and help the person. And I've been in cases where the medical community has been stumped and at a loss for answers. And it ended up being a, banishment ritual that saved the person's life, literally. So, I mean, when it comes to helping people, we need to really just stop removing, the obstacles and even the obstacles in our mind, like shame, and just start accepting it. I mean, this has gone into a more medical area, which is fine. It's really about divination. It works with divination too, learning to divine messages from the spiritual world and from spiritual forces and from entities. It comes from, opening up and kind of accepting that, you might have these innate abilities, you might have these skills in you, and just, not thinking I'm crazy. Because, I mean, you, when you started, when you thought you were crazy, did it kind of allow you to expand or kind of diminish your abilities?
It diminished them or kept me from expanding them more. I mean, I spend a lot of time trying to prove to myself that this wasn't real, that this wasn't happening, that there was some kind of logical, scientific explanation for everything going on, and then there was not. And I really didn't know how to proceed from there except to just keep going with it because my curiosity was like, well, I have to figure out what this is. There has to be some explanation for this.
There's nothing wrong with keeping a logical mind in this path, and I actually think it's essential to kind of challenge what you get, because it does force you to stay grounded. And that's one of the dangers of this path, or any spiritual path, is flying off into the ether and kind of losing touch with this world. That's also another situation where you would need, medical intervention. In the past, I did end up detaching from, this world. And it was through, a series of professionals helping me that I was able to reattach. So being ungrounded is just as dangerous.
Yeah, and you just said actually what I was thinking. I've heard this from a lot of different sources. I've taken classes and things now at this point, and grounding is so important.
It is.
Because if you do not ground, and the more you go into this stuff, the more grounded you really need to be, because you can go into some pretty strange places.
And you always have to be able to come back.
Yes. And if you can't, it's going to start affecting your life.
Mm-hmm. Also, my skills became stronger when I was able to ground. When I was young, my crown chakra was really open and big. My third eye chakra was really open and big. The rest of my chakras were not so open and big. So it was kind of like this pull that was pulling me into it. So I had all of this, upper spiritual energy flowing into me. And when I grounded, though, I was able to access the energy of the lower chakras. And it was like my body created a line with the chakras, and all my abilities amplified because all my chakras were working together. All of the pieces were aligned, and being grounded, I could go up, I could come back down, I could, receive messages, and then I could come down and translate those messages. And I actually really started to get a sense for what was real, what was my imagination, what was external, what was internal. I started to experience the flow of energies differently, and I started to be able to really tell where they were coming from and where they were going. And that was when I really took off, was when I actually learned to ground. That was a very powerful and kind of a pinnacle of my development, was really successfully learning to ground.
Yeah, and I think that's one of like the best and most basic things people should mm-hmm. learn to do is ground, and ground well. And something else you mentioned just now made me think, getting familiar with the different chakras, doing exercises where you connect to each individual chakra, because everybody thinks, oh, I want to open my third eye, everything comes through the third eye. They don't realize that all of the chakras actually can impact your communication.
They all work together, and each chakra has a different role to play. Each chakra can actually access a new ability to help your third eye. Your third eye receives the messages in your mind actually translates them. So your chakra brings different stimulus, different messages, different experiences. And each chakra has its own different layer and its own different vibrations that it can bring to the table to kind of amalgamate all that together and help that.
Yeah.
And bring that all together. And that creates the ability to really translate these messages too.
Yeah, like, for example, I would say I did not realize at first. When I first got into this, I was like, oh, I want to open my third eye. I want to communicate. Not realizing that because I'm clairaudient, a lot of my hearing ability is tied into my throat chakra.
Yeah, which is amazing. Your throat chakra goes out and your hearing goes out.
Yes, that's it. When I have a block in my throat chakra, mm-hmm. or something happens to my throat chakra, I not only, different things happen with different types of blocks, but I can directly relate issues with my throat chakra to them being able to hear,
mm-hmm.
or not being able to hear.
Yeah, well, the third chakra is the communication chakra, and it's also the chakra that is kind of connected to the ears. Is the ears, ears, nose, and throat. There, mm-hmm. that system is all connected, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
because the throat is connected to the ears.
Yes, and is it the sacral chakra that's
connected? Sacral chakra is connected to emotions.
Yes.
Yeah. So when my sacral chakra blows up or goes out, or when I get a block in my sacral chakra, it really affects my ability to sense.
Mm-hmm.
Developing your psychic senses, though, is not the only way to receive messages from them and to work with spirits and entities. You can actually use various tools as well. And a lot of people prefer the tools. Like there's Ouija boards, pendulums, spirit boards, tarot cards. There's all sorts of neat divination tools out there. I personally like tarot cards. I use tarot cards and different divination cards because I find that I can really get a sense of the messages that come through. I find it's a lot of fun too because I find each card deck has its own personality and they share different messages. Like I have a ghost tarot deck, which the messages are usually very etheric, very layered, very wispy, they're very etheric. Whereas my Necronomicon tarot deck is usually very blunt and this is how it is. And they're the best for giving me the doom and gloom messages and the cryptic warnings. But no, a lot of people find that spiritual tools like that are great for connecting with spirits.
Yeah, I use oracle decks personally just because they work better with my energies and also how I interpret them. And I do have a pendulum. I don't really use it that much. It's just, I can use it, but it's not my preferred method. Yeah.
No, I find, that's another thing. I find when you can hear or when you get messages through your psychic senses, things like the pendulum and the Ouija board, they're like, meh,
Yeah.
They're more for fun than anything.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, what can you guys do with the pendulum today? Or where do you want it? What messages do you want to reveal on the Ouija board today? Even though I can usually hear the messages before they're spelling it out. So I've got the entire thing done and I'm still sitting there spelling it out. It's like, yeah. I know what you're saying.
And then sometimes they laugh at you for that.
Yes.
It's like, oh, you don't believe you're hearing me today. It's like, no. Like, you're answering me. Yeah. Well,
like, no, I just want to try something new.
Yeah, I would like to try, to practice with the pendulum.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I mean, these every single tool takes time to develop. You have to develop that skill. It's a unique skill set that you have to develop. And every single skill, there's a depth to it. You can go deep into the layers. It's like, okay, you're at level one now. Well, what can you do at level two? What can you do at level three? What can you do at level four? I mean, some of these skills, when they really develop and open up, it's amazing what you get. Well, you know that. You've got clairaudient where you can hear everybody.
Yeah. And, I also have been fortunate enough to have other people share with me their different types of divination, like using tarot cards or mm-hmm. other actual tools, because I don't rely on a lot of the physical tools. I do rely on my clairaudience most of the time. But seeing what people have done with tarot cards, it really is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And it is impressive what some people get and how they use it.
Yeah, there's layers to it, definitely. Especially tarot cards. Tarot cards have such a, like, every single deck is unique. Every single card has its own story. I find that, there's layers to reading the energies and there's layers to really getting the messages. And you also have to kind of surrender yourself to the spiritual force. And this is why we're adding divination into this talk, because you do have to, in order to get the messages, you have to kind of surrender yourself to the messages and put yourself aside, because your mind would like to insert things. Your mind would like to come in and be like, no, I didn't hear that. No, that's not right. No, we're going to say this because this is more accurate. And that's how readings get kind of tainted and twisted. So when you step aside, when you have the ability to kind of step aside and just allow the energies to come through, then you get something that's incredibly profound and incredibly layered and also incredibly connected to the individual that you're kind of, to the individual that you're doing the reading on. I know in some of the readings that I do, I don't even remember the things I write, or I'm writing it and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And then it makes sense to the person who I send it to. So, because it wasn't meant for me, it was meant for them.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And also, I think a lot of people when they're learning judge what they get. Mm-hmm. And the judgment can really kill it.
Oh, yeah, judgment. Judging what you get destroys everything. People developing who are developing their psychic senses, don't judge. Don't judge. You will learn. Trust me. You will learn what's your imagination and what's not your imagination in time. But when you're starting off, you have to open up the energies and let them come through. And the imagination is connected to the third eye. That's what throws a lot of people off, is the imagination actually is the image center of the mind. And it does receive messages from the spiritual world. The imagination, I mean, you can play a fantasy movie on it, or you can play a documentary on it. That's kind of the difference, but it's still the same tool being utilized in order to receive the images and the message.
That's a really good analogy.
It's true. But it's learning to distinguish which is the documentary and which is the fantasy, but that does come with time.
Yeah.
But the first step is just kind of accepting it and allowing things to come through.
Exactly.
All right, well, that's kind of an overview of divination. The next one we're going to talk about is channeling. So your definition of channeling.
My definition of channeling is when I completely disconnect from my body and they speak through me. They take control of me and I am not present for it. I have no control over what I say or do, mm-hmm. and they're just there.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a difference between channeling and possession. They're very similar. Like, they're almost identical, because in possession, it is the same sort of thing. Where in channeling, though, I know that I voluntarily step aside and go into kind of a dormant state and allow them to take over. Whereas in possession, it's kind of forced. The entity forces its way in and takes control. Now, yes, in some cases of possession, it can end up like, you know, Linda Blair and The Exorcist, which I have seen. But in other cases, an entity can force take over to help you. Like, sometimes people will experience things where they've suddenly lost control, but then they've been saved. They have not voluntarily given up their body. Like, my husband once was driving home in the middle of the night and he was exhausted. This was when he was a young teenager, and he does not remember the drive home, and he had a spirit guide basically take over and drive him home. He had no voluntary control. He did not give consent to have his body taken over, but the spirit took over and drove him home so that he was safe. That would be a form of possession. In channeling, you actually decide, you sit with the entity and go, yes, I'm going to go dormant, and I'm going to let you in, and I'm going to take control. So in channeling also, you're usually coming forward with a specific purpose. So there's a specific message to be delivered or a specific goal you wish to attain, whether it's delivering a message to a person or communicating with them or performing an act, that sort of stuff. So with channeling, what you do basically is you have to have your psychic senses developed to the point where you can hear them. You have to be able to hear them, and you have to be able to kind of know what's going on. You have to be able to communicate with them, and you have to have a connection to them. Your energies have to be linked to them in some way. And then what you do is I kind of take a deep breath, and I go dormant, and I let them take over. I let them kind of infuse in me and take over. And I sometimes remember things that happens when I channel. I don't usually remember. It depends on who I'm channeling. If I'm certain ones, I remember more than others. Some I black out and I'm done. I don't remember anything.
Yeah, it varies for me with that. In terms of channeling, yes, I'm not there when it's going on. I'm definitely disconnected, dormant, and I guess I do get into a relaxed state. I can hear them, so I'm usually talking to them before I let them in.
Mm-hmm.
They are invited. I do define possession in the same way as you do, in that it's forced and I'm not giving permission.
Mm-hmm.
But with the channeling, it is an invitation. I let them in and then we go from there.
Yeah. And channeling, I mean, it's really neat when you channel. The messages you get, your voice doesn't really change. Sometimes it does. Depends.
Sometimes the person's entire energy changes or their mm-hmm. eyes will change.
Yeah.
Depends, I guess, on what they're channeling or who they're channeling. Mm-hmm. And
vocal tone definitely changes.
Yes.
How you react to things changes.
Sometimes you get an accent.
That's funny.
It is. Your entire accent, vocabulary, words, everything will change.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another thing that's really important with channeling is that when it's over, you need to be able to ground.
Oh, and cleanse your entire body. You need to be able to wash the energy off of you so that you're not influenced or have energy that drags you down. You have to make sure that after the entity leaves, you just cleanse your body. You wash the energy, ground, you return. It's a good idea to usually eat something afterwards.
Yeah.
I find I'm always hungry after channeling.
I do at times, I guess. Oh, it depends on how long I channel for, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. Depending on who or what you're channeling, you want to have established boundaries. How long am I going to channel for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there somebody else in the room? Can they handle this? I mean, is it something or someone you're familiar with that you're channeling? Or is it something you've never channeled before?
Yes.
I mean, we work with demons and different entities that we're familiar with, but some people might be doing it with, you know, whatever, it's just hanging around them. That's another thing, is being able to determine what you're letting in.
Yes.
Really, really need to know what's around you. You have to be able to differentiate between the energies, because you don't want to just think you're talking to someone or something and invite the wrong thing in.
Yeah, you want to be very careful who you let into your energy field. You want to know who you're working with. You want to know what they are. And you basically want to have a way to get them out.
Yes.
You always want to have a way to get any energy out, any foreign energy. I mean, what happens? I mean, I've been possessed by an actual malicious entity. And what do you do in that situation? I mean, I've had it where I have it set up where if I do get taken over, I can react in a way where I push it out. But you have to train yourself to be able to do that.
Yes.
Because if something nefarious and dangerous gets in, it can destroy you. It can destroy your entire day. I mean, I don't know. Those of you who have actually seen a violent possession will tell you just how destructive it can be and how horrible it can be for the person who's possessed. I mean, I've had it happen twice. One time when I wanted to experience it, so I kind of let it in because I wanted to see if I could actually handle it in the situation. And then another time it had a direct link to me because of the work I was doing, and it actually just went into me and I pushed it out. And that was a pretty intense moment.
Yeah.
But no, you have to know what you're doing in that situation. You really have to be able to remain calm, remain focused, get clear in your mind, and be able to really distinguish what's going on, because this thing is going to take over your energy. It's going to overwhelm you. It's going to start trying to influence you to do what it wants. So you have to be able to be of strong enough mind to say, okay, you know what? This is not me. I need to get me back. And you need to do something that interrupts that. You need to interrupt what it's doing. And then in that singular moment, you need to push it out. You don't, I mean, this happens in a split second when it happens. But no, that would be a violent possession.
Although, now that you mention that, I'm also thinking this is where mental mastery comes in, mastery mm-hmm. of the self and knowing yourself. Because I've seen people let sledge in. And
oh, yeah.
They get possessed by it. They don't even know it's there. And then they're just acting really strange. And if you've ever interacted with somebody that's possessed by sludge, if you interacted with them before, now I have dealt with it so many times, people who have things attached to them, I'm kind of like, something's wrong with this person's energy and they're acting really strange. They might be acting erratic or, you know, just not normal, saying strange things. They seem unaware of things at times. And again, you know, some people I meet the first time and it's like something's off about them, or it's somebody you know who was, you know, completely normal, and then you meet up with them later and it's like something's changed with them.
Yeah, these things, they're interesting because they fulfill gaps in people's life. I mean, we all have things that we want to attain. We all have, you know, things from our past that kind of leave wounds and scars. And a lot of times these sledge energies, they can take the form of something that kind of temporarily takes away that pain. I mean, their energy is insidious and almost like a drug in a way. And it gives you something, but at a really high cost. And eventually, you know, you end up spiraling downhill because it wants to consume and eat your energies. And that's what it ends up doing. There's differences in them. Some are more quick, and they'll go in and they'll just attack you. The ones that attacked me were really quick. I mean, because they knew I knew what they were. And so it was more a battle of who could get a hold of my mind. But some of them are really insidious and they kind of sneak in slowly, you know, and they pretend to be your friend and they start to work their way in. And then they slowly start to decay things. They slowly start to chip away at things. They slowly start to, you know, push you down. And then, you know, you start changing. You know, you start becoming aggressive, you start becoming, you know, really off. That's the only way I can really describe it, is off.
Yeah, and another way they get in is they'll prey on your insecurities and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Things you might not feel so great about.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, you know, situations that have happened that you haven't been able to mentally resolve in yourself or heal.
Mm-hmm.
They can get in through that. I've seen it happen to people.
Insecurities are terrible. And shame. Back to shame.
Back to shame again.
Yeah, they can get in through shame. Exploit the shame. All the shame.
They'll exploit anything they can, really.
Yes. And I mean, it's funny because a lot of the people who have been possessed in like a full like exorcist style, it's been sludge that has done it, not demons. It's been like a sludge destructive entity that basically wants to feed, cause carnage, and at the end destroy the individual. Demon channeling is very different than sludge possession. I've experienced both and they're incredibly different.
Yeah, I've also experienced both. Unfortunately, I have been possessed by sludge. It was not fun.
So I guess we've already started leading into possession. So possession, as I said before, is a forced entry of an entity into you. Now, we've talked kind of about sludge entities and negative possessions, but not all possessions are bad. Like I said at the beginning of this chat, my husband got possessed while driving home late at night. He doesn't remember driving home at all. He has no memory of it because the entity took over and drove him home and basically got him into bed and safe. So sometimes they'll actually intervene and, you know, step in and help. And I mean, a lot of people say this is the guardian angel, although I think in some people it's more of a guardian demon.
Definitely.
I know. So there's guardian angels, there's guardian demons, there's both of them. You know, it all depends on what side of the pendulum you walk on, and both they do kind of look out for you, and in some situations they will actively possess you to help you. I'm trying to think of a situation. I've never really had a situation where that's happened to me. I know it's happened to my husband quite a bit when he was a teenager, because he would be out late at night and he'd drive home, and they do watch out. I know a lot of people on the other side of the pendulum, they will say, you know, they've witnessed miracles happen, angels have protected people. And these are all spiritual forces that do intervene on our behalf to help us. And sometimes that does result in positive possession. So the last one we're going to talk about is a really cool skill called transvocation. Now, transvocation is a kind of a half possession where they will step into you, but they will share your body with you. So both the entity and the person are there. So you get their experiences, you get their wisdom, you get their knowledge, you get their abilities, you get kind of their talents. You get to kind of share in what they have. And it allows you to kind of gain a new perspective on a situation and also to gain wisdom and knowledge that you would not have before. I've done translocation a few times, one mostly with Mammon, just because I was negotiating more financial orientated deals, like getting my international property at 0% down. That was greatly influenced by the practice of translocation with Mammon. But it's really cool because you kind of become a different person. You kind of become this new entity because there's you with your perspective, there's a demon with their perspective, and then when you merge the consciousness, you both have a new perspective. They kind of share in your perspective and you share in their perspective. It's really beneficial because you really can gain access to basically the wisdom and knowledge of an ancient being while still remaining in your body. There's a lot of situations where, you know, translocation would be good. I mean, I have translocated before to kind of gain strength and stuff, because you can also translocate to shift your physical ability. So I've become stronger in those states. I've become faster. I've become braver. I become things that my normal reactions are replaced by a combined reaction of what my normal reaction would be and what the demon's reaction would be. This is a very interesting state, and I don't recommend staying there for very long because the demon is energetically greater than you. They're energetically more powerful than you, and they're in their natural form, so their energy can easily dominate you. So it can become very insidious, it can become very infective, and you can become very comfortable, almost like stepping back and letting their energies do it. You have to have a strong enough willpower to maintain half of the consciousness, half of the experience, and they represent the other half. And you cannot step back and allow them to take more, because then it starts to become possession. And if you're living in that state, if you're relying too much on that state, you could actually become comfortable with that state. And then you don't want them to leave. Then you want to stay in the comfort area. You want to stay, you know, nestled. So you have to be of a strong enough mind to be able to handle being in that place. And a lot of people, you know, they ask me how I translocate, and it's like, well, you first want to learn how to focus. You need to learn how to talk to them, and you also have to learn mental mastery. Mental mastery is key for this one. And also, again, grounding when it's done, and cleansing, getting all of their energy out of your body.
Definitely, because I think some people, and not everybody, I mean, okay, translocation is good to connect with them. I feel like if you're alone with them, you know, it's something you could do to get information from them, to learn from them. Whereas channeling, I do more while I'm obviously doing that for somebody else because I'm completely gone. Mm-hmm. So translocation is maybe something you do on your own. But with that, you really have to be careful what you're letting in again.
Yes.
Being able to remove things if something gets in that's not what you want, setting clear boundaries, having them respect your boundaries,
mm-hmm.
having that trust built up with them and knowing who you are interacting with.
Yes.
I've heard people say things that sounds like they want to do this as an escape.
Yes.
Sort of get out of their life and let the demon come in and fix it, or whatever entity it happens to be.
It should never be an escape. It should always be an enhancement or an exploration of knowledge to kind of help you, you know, attain a new level and learn a new perspective. It's a journey, or it's basically a tool of learning. It's not a tool of escaping.
Yeah, I don't think it should be for that. Although, no. I do think some people may use it or want to use it as that.
Mm-hmm. And that's dangerous. That's dangerous because you can, again, deground, get lost in your own mind and end up separating from this reality, which is a very dangerous thing to have happen.
Yes.
I mean, with any of these skills, before doing them, you need to learn your spiritual foundation. You need to be able to shield yourself, because you've got to be able to decide what comes in and out of your energy field. You have to have control over that. If you're having things that are coming in and touching you and coming things and doing things without your consent, your shields are not strong enough. You're not at a place where you should be voluntarily doing this. You need to get your shields to a point where you are in control. You are strong enough and you are in control to kind of dictate what goes in and out of your energy space. Then with grounding, you know, you have to be able to ground at the end of all of this. You have to be able to ground because you have to come back to this world. You have to come back to this world. You have to come back to reality, and you have to be able to function here. So grounding pulls you back in. It brings you back to your body. It brings you back to earth, and it realigns you with yourself, because some of these things will take you to places where you can get lost. you know, cleansing, you have to be able to remove the entity's energy from your body. You have to be able to release it. You have to be able to get it out of you. Focusing. You have to focus when you're in the transvocation state. You have to focus when you channel, when you let them in, when you get them out. You've got to be able to focus. Even when you've been force possessed, you have to be able to, the one to decide when you're possessed, you know, you've got to be able to get the energy out of you. The possession one is an interesting one because if they're nefarious, they're going to get in and they're not going to leave. You got to push them out. If they're good, they'll usually come in, do what they got to do, and then leave. In which case, then you've got to cleanse and ground and kind of readjust yourself and reacquaint yourself. But the ideal situation with possession is not to let the bad one happen in the first place. But if it does, know how to take control of your energy, know how to focus and get yourself back, and know how to get rid of that negative energy. And then mental mastery is so important in all of this because you have to be able to know yourself. You have to know your mind and you have to be able to control your thoughts. I mean, mental mastery is basically where you are in control of yourself. You are in control of your mind. You are in control of your thoughts and you are in control of your energies. And you know what's going on and you can decide what happens with those energies. So the spiritual foundation is so important. And people ask me, well, how do you start doing this? Well, the best way to start doing this is to learn your spiritual foundation and to learn to talk to them. That's basically what you need to do. Once you have your spiritual foundation down and you know you can handle this and you can talk with them and you know what they are, you know who they are, and you have goals set in mind for what you're going to do with these tools, then you basically work with them and they will tell you exactly what you need to do. I mean, I don't know, I think they have different methods of letting them in.
You mean you versus I?
Yeah. I come at it from a vibrational standpoint where I kind of align, where I focus and I sense their vibrations and I kind of let their vibrations in and then my body kind of begins to vibrate with their vibrational frequency. And then once my body's vibrating their vibrational frequency, I just kind of step back.
I have to try to figure out how to explain how I do this.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It is, yeah, because I do it differently than that.
Yes.
Like I said, I can hear them, so usually it's connecting with them energetically, hearing them. They'll mm-hmm. talk me through it. It's like, okay, you know, I'm going to step back now. You step in, and then I'll start to feel myself recede energetically, and their energy come more into me
mm-hmm.
and sort of, I guess, merge, or I will pull back completely and then let them take over.
Yeah. So it is similar, but there's differences. And that's one thing I think a lot of people have to realize is when you're doing this skill, a lot of time it's going to be based on what skills you have.
Yeah.
Your ability, your skills, what you're capable of doing and what you're strongest in. I mean, I'm strong in clairsentience, you're strong in clairaudience, so we're going to have different methods to do this. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to you working with the entity in order to either share your body or allow them to take over your body.
Yeah.
And working with their energies and working with their vibrations. So explaining it is it's always fun.
Yes. Yeah, because a lot of it is like feeling or sensing or, mm-hmm. you know, something. It's really not anything I've ever spoken out loud to try to explain to anybody. It's just something I've been able to do.
Mm-hmm. It's also that trust. I mean, when you do it, you have to trust to let go.
Yes, you do.
And again, back to shame. You can't be afraid of being silly because that'll ruin it.
Yeah.
I mean, I apparently have an accent at times, so.
Yeah, I'm sure I've done horrifying things when I've been channeling that I wouldn't, if I had done it when it was, you know, me and if I was present or even transvocating. That's another thing, I guess, to mention is transvocating. You can block things or have blocks and mm-hmm. not.
The point of it, though, is to remove the blocks. I mean, a good transvocation is one where you're completely clear. You're basically, you've transcended yourself to merge into a new being with the entity. So the blocks transcend, they disappear because the blocks are with you.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you still have the blocks from your body, it means you haven't fully surrendered to the transvocation process. You have to kind of, you still have to get to that point where it's basically, it's, you're not there anymore to interfere with it. You're something new that's part of this. So their experience is now part of your world. So the blocks is not there because you trust in their world, if that makes sense.
It does. And as I'm thinking of this, I'm just thinking of when I've encountered different people doing things. People who say that they're channeling or say that they're translocating, but they're actually not, because the things that come through are very obviously colored by their perception mm-hmm. and their...
Oh, yeah, there's definitely different layers of it. I mean, I know that there's different... Your mind when channeling can interfere. I mean, just because your conscious side is stepped back, you have to also separate. You have to also allow your subconscious to step back, or some of these blocks are going to manifest, because getting the messages out, I mean, the entity can take over, and sometimes they might be silent. They might be completely silent because your own subconscious is blocking the experience, so the entity is being blocked. Partial blocking is where you have not removed the blocks entirely, so there's still things that can't get out. There's still things that cannot come out. And then as you learn to channel, as you learn to really step back and to kind of allow your blocks to leave, that's when you really get the messages that come through, which when you actually fully step aside and allow them to come through, that's when you get, you know, completely unfiltered channeling that comes through. So there's different layers of this. And to embrace that layer, that final layer, you really have to have mental mastery. You have to know yourself. You've got to know your dark self. You've got to know your triggers. You got to know what you're ashamed of. You have to understand yourself, because that's the only way you can really pull back.
Back to what you said about the triggers and things like that. The things that upset people, they might not be able to get certain messages through. It could actually mm-hmm. detach them completely from the entire session if something comes up that's not healed.
Yes, if something comes up that's really not healed, that can be quite... That's why shadow work, that's why, you know, exploring yourself and exploring your mind and really having a knowledge of yourself is so important, because some of these things, especially when you're in that state, you're vulnerable. You're completely vulnerable. And if something like that comes up, it can really shock you. It can really shake your entire world. You have to be very careful, and you have to be very grounded in those states. And you have to have a kind of a contingency plan to know what to do if something like this comes up. It's like, all right, well, this came up, so now I have to, you know, reground. I've got to cleanse, and I've got to calm myself. I know that in when you're doing like guided meditations and stuff like that, or when I used to do a lot of past life regressions on people when I was, you know, young, I had a natural skill for it. And there would sometimes traumatic things would come up, and you have to stay calm with that person in that state, and you have to be able to get them through that state. You have to be able to kind of be a nurturing and supportive force for them while they're going through that, and kind of bring them back, ground them, remind them that they're safe, remind them that there's nothing going on, and kind of just help them through that situation.
Another thing that I thought of is, if you have somebody channeling or translocating for you, you should really work with somebody that you trust, because mm-hmm. unfortunately there are people who think they can channel or translocate who cannot. Or even people who will use it to abuse other people. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that happen, where people have given messages to people and it's very obviously not a helpful message.
Oh, it's destructive. I mean, I don't understand destructive messages. Like, I mean, sometimes when you get readings and things, you get messages that are, you know, they kind of shake your world up. But for a person to actually go in and say, well, this is wrong, and it's very clear that it's because, like, let's just say that the person is of a more right-hand path perspective, and I'm like, well, you know, your work, your demons, you know, they're all fake, you know.
Oh yeah, something like that. Or I actually had a reading done by somebody. She wasn't channeling per se, but she was reading my energy, and the things she was getting were just absolutely appalling, because mm-hmm. it was like, what is she seeing and what is she describing? That actually was when you and I had the discussion about cloaking certain energies from certain types of people that read them incorrectly. Mm-hmm. Because she could not interpret it, because she saw the dark energy, the demons, everything that mm-hmm. was around me, and interpreted it very negatively. There was a huge bias on her part. Again, that wasn't channeling yes. or translocating, but the same thing can happen. Mm-hmm.
Or even people who say your guides and your, you know, your demon companions aren't there and aren't real. I mean, really ask yourself, why are they saying this? Do they even know? Can they even sense your demon companions? Like, a lot of spiritual beings have different vibrations. A lot of spiritual beings have, you know, different frequencies, and some people just can't pick them up. Some people will pick them up in a negative way, like the experience Alana had. If a person comes in and flat out says that your experience is like 100% wrong and isn't willing to kind of open up to possibilities, then there's something else going on there. And there's usually some agenda or some, you know,
prejudice.
Yeah, some prejudice. There's usually some prejudice that they have or some unhealed aspect of themselves that's kind of making them, you know, say those things. And I know that, you know, it's not always because the people are bad people. It's because they have unhealed things in themselves that, you know, they need to realize and they need to come to terms with. I know I've had things that I've had to come to terms with. And if I have things I've had to challenge in myself and I've had to look at myself and really be like, you know, why do I think this way? Why am I coming at it from this way? And a lot of my journey has been that, challenging, you know, my perception, challenging where I come from, challenging why I think the things I do, challenging myself to, you know, step out of that. And so, you know, when somebody usually has that like really black and white approach to things, or they say, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, you have no demon here that's helping you. Why are they saying that? Especially if you've had experiences, if, you know, you've worked with this, if you've worked with this path, if you've worked with these things, you know, don't let other people come in and taint your experience, because they might not know. They really might not know. There's different frequencies of entities, there's different frequencies of vibrations out there, and there's so many of them that no single person is attuned to all of them. I know I'm not attuned to everything. I'm very aware when I'm not attuned to something that somebody else is, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, my big attunement is demons. I'm very attuned to demons, but other spiritual entities, not so much. It's not, you know, it doesn't make me bad what I do. It's just that's where my attunement is. And other people might be attuned to angels. Other people might be attuned to other spiritual beings. That's just how we are. And that's just part of this experience here. And we need to honor that. And if you don't pick up, or if somebody else doesn't pick up your entity, doesn't mean they're not there. It just means that person might not pick them up.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll pick them up as something else.
Yes.
You've had the demons interpreted as dragons.
I have. That was funny. I
had somebody tell me there were beings of light all around me. I was like, oh, that's funny.
That was funny, too.
They're like, it's like a divine energy. I'm like, yeah, it's divine. It's definitely a divine energy, but it's not what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a positive feeling towards them, but they never would have identified them as demons, because demons have such a stigma attached to them. Yes. In some areas. You say demon and everybody's like, oh no, you know.
And well, for me, it was their dragons. And it's like, yeah. Well, they're not dragons, but you know, I'll give you a credit for trying.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I've had that too. It's just the way people interpret the energies. They're like, well, mm-hmm. I think it's this. And I'm like, yeah. You know, some people I've seen get bent out of shape because they're like, oh, this person told me it was this. It's like, well, you know, it's not. So,
yeah.
Why are you listening to this person? I mean, okay, in the beginning, when you first start, it's great to have things verified. Everybody wants the verification because you don't trust your senses. But you have to get to a point where you do trust your senses.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, verification can be fun. It's fun when we do readings for each other because, you know, we usually validate each other's points. But be very careful when you're starting out, because somebody giving you a bad reading, just be careful it doesn't like destroy your confidence. That's a big thing, is that, you know, when your confidence gets hit, you shouldn't let other people destroy it, because it can taint your path, it can taint your connection with them. So if somebody says something like that and you kind of get hit like that, just be like, all right, you know what, I'm going to reset this and, you know, continue on. I mean, they might not even have intended to do it, and it might be something that later down the road actually helps you. But in the meantime, don't take it just take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, it could be a lesson that you have to learn in the future. It could be a person's prejudice, or it could just be how they interpreted things that kind of clashed with your interpretation. But actually, when you look at it from a different perspective, they can work. So, I mean, the spiritual world is not just one perspective. It's a multitude of perspectives. It's so many perspectives, and it's so many layers that us in our three-dimensional bodies really have a hard time kind of analyzing and grasping all those layers. So that's often readers are picking up a very specific layer. They're picking up a certain aspect, and that aspect might help you now, or might help you later, or it might help you, you know, kind of through something, or it might not even help you at all. It might just be some residual energy. Who knows? You know, the point is, though, is not to let any reading crush your path or to keep you from moving forward. That's what you shouldn't do. We're on readings.
Yes, we go off on tangents quite a bit sometimes.
Yes, we do. All right, well, I think we're going to end that there because I think we're really over time on this one.
Okay.
Like, really over time.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. It's fun to be back, and we will be with you again for another delightfully dark discussion. Talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Bye.